Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Later in the hour, we remember an iconic Provincetown fisherman and hear the story of loss and heroism in a severe nor'easter that hit the North Atlantic in 1962. But first, in 2015, the Gayhead Light on the western end of Martha's Vineyard was moved 129 feet back from the eroding cliffs. It was an engineering feat to move the iconic 400-ton brick structure, a feat that captivated people both on and off island. Liz Witham and Ken Wentworth's film Keepers of the Light uses the moving of the Gayhead Light as a backdrop to explore the rich history of Aquinna and the people who live there. The broadcast premiere of Keepers of the Light is Thursday, November 15th on WGBH Channel 2, and we welcome one of the filmmakers, Liz Witham.
Hi.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
So let's start by hearing a bit of the trailer for the film.
For two centuries, the Gayhead Lighthouse has been an iconic symbol of Martha's Vineyard and New England's maritime history.
But the lighthouse needs to be moved soon before it falls into the ocean.
We have timelines of that marching back of that bluff since 1870.
We're on the most western tip of Martha's Vineyard. We're Aquinna Wampanoags here. And this is our ancestral homeland. We've never been moved. The lighthouse was the center of this community. My grandfather, he was the lighthouse keeper. He was very proud of the fact that he was an Aquinna Wampanoag and he was the first Native American principal lighthouse keeper anywhere in the country.
Growing up, it was an automatic that this was part of us. It was in us. Along with the ocean, that clay is in us. As they erode, it's very hard sometimes to see it all melt away.
So moving the Gayhead Light was well documented, I was heard by news outlets, residents, and visitors. But your film doesn't focus just on the move. Instead, you explore the history of the place and people in and around Aquinna. So talk about how you shaped the focus of the film and the research that you did.
So just to give a little bit of context to my personal relation to the story, I was born in Aquinna and I was raised in Aquinna. I moved away for a number of years, and now I live there on Lighthouse Road. So I have always been really aware of the rich culture there in the place. And when the town started to understand that we had to move the lighthouse, it became pretty clear in sort of a short period of time that this was something that we had to get done. And we all talked about it, in town meetings, and we were all aware of it as townspeople. And so I knew at that point that it would make a really interesting film, actually, because I just knew the history of the town, and I know a lot about the people who live there. And I also felt like the moving of the lighthouse would provide a pretty dramatic arc of, how can a community come together and accomplish this?
Right. Yeah. Your intro to a bigger story.
Yeah.
So the Aquinna Wampanoag were the first human settlers in the area, and the Native American legend of Mashup describes how they came to settle there. So tell us a little bit about that legend.
So in the film, I feel like this is really beautifully told by Bettina Washington and Christina Hook. And the story that they tell is that Mashup came from the mainland. He was seeking out a new place to live. And as he walked, he dragged his toe and it created Vineyard Sound. And then he stopped at the cliffs and he made that his home.
So as the whaling industry and the population in the region grew, Vineyard Sound became a thoroughfare for vessel traffic between New York and Boston. When was the Gayhead Light first commissioned, and why was it located in that spot?
The Gayhead Light was actually, so there was a thing called the first Public Works Act, actually, in the United States. The first Congress of the United States created the first Public Works Act, and part of that was the establishing of lighthouses. And so that created the infrastructure for different state representatives to request funding for lighthouses. And there was a state senator, Senator Pelleg from Nantucket, who had been a whaling captain and was very, aware of the dangers of Devil's Bridge. And so he requested that a light be put there. And actually, at the time that he requested that there be a light put there, the town was and still is a Wampanoag town. And that federal taking of property there was the first removal of land from what was tribal land.
You're talking about the Devil's Bridge. That chain of rocks extending from the Gayhead Cliffs is called Devil's Bridge, and they've proved hazardous to navigation. Many vessels tragically met their fate on those rocks, including the steamer the City of Columbus in January of 1884. You include this incident to highlight another important aspect to Aquinnah, and that's the life-saving station. So tell us more about the life-saving stations and the individuals who manned it.
Yeah, the life-saving station, the Humane Society, which some people think, oh, Humane Society, they think of animals, but actually back when it was started as a life-saving service because this was pre-Coast Guard, and shipping was extremely important, and there was no way to save people who had been in shipwrecks. And so there was this great need to organize people along the Massachusetts coastline to patrol the coasts and to save people who were in shipwrecks. And so one of those spots was in Gayhead, and the life-saving crew were primarily in Gayhead were Wampanoag Indians. And yeah, so the City of Columbus, which, you know, it's just such a tragic story. That ship left out of Boston. It was heading down south, and they made some errors, the captain and the first mate and the watch, just sort of this perfect storm of errors on this very cold January night, and they hit Devil's Bridge. The assistant lighthouse keeper didn't see the shipwreck until the morning when the sun came up, and he went out into the community and rallied the men, the Wampanoag men who are part of this life-saving team, to go out and save the only survivors who had been able to survive the night.
Whale oil was used to light the original Gayhead Light. Describe the life of a lighthouse keeper in the early days of the light.
So the first lighthouse keeper, Ebenezer Skiff, he really had a challenging time up there. There was no water. Actually, there was no water the entire history of the time that the Gayhead Lighthouse had a lighthouse keeping there. There was never water there because it's on top of the clay cliffs and there's not water there. But anyway, Ebenezer Skiff, who was the first lighthouse keeper, he had to go about a mile and get water for his family. I think he wasn't expecting all of the challenges. Nevertheless, he was there longer than any other lighthouse keeper. So it was challenging, but I think he rose to the challenge and he must have liked it to some degree because he stayed there.
He stayed for a while.
Yeah.
So the current brick lighthouse structure was erected in 1855 and the bricks were made from clay at the cliffs. The light was upgraded with Fresnel lens, which made the light much more powerful. But the life of the lighthouse keeper was still rigorous. In fact, you interview some of the children and grandchildren of previous light keepers. What were some of the stories about the lighthouse that stuck with you?
Well, it's interesting because, every family that inhabited the lighthouse really had some kind of experience. Some experiences were extremely similar, and some of them had totally different experiences from each other. So one experience that was similar across the board pretty much was this experience of cleaning the prisms of the lens. I think that left a really deep impression on people. It was something that had to be done regularly. And often the children of the lighthouse keeper would be the ones who were tasked with that job. And so they spent a lot of time up there in the light room, which is a 360-degree view of the ocean and the cliffs and at the time was a very busy waterway. So I think that experience of being up in the light room and polishing the prisms really was a deep one for the people who kept the light. And then the light before it was electrified, there was a mechanism that had to be wound up every 4 hours. So there was a lighthouse keeper, an assistant lighthouse keeper, and they had to keep it running every 4 hours throughout the night. They would wind it up. And apparently that was pretty heavy and difficult work. So I think that really left an impression.
So the lighthouse keepers were political appointments made by the president. So did your research explain why and when this custom changed?
Yes, they were appointed by the president. And actually, when they first started, the Secretary of the Treasury, Alexander Hamilton, was in charge of the lighthouses.
Despite the Wampanoag being the original residents of Aquinnah, it wasn't until the 1920s that the first Wampanoag became a keeper, Charles Vanderhoop Sr. So talk about the significance of this in the Wampanoag community.
I think it was a huge honor for Charles Vanderhoop when he was actually assistant lighthouse keeper on Nantucket at Sankaty first. And then he came over and he became the head lighthouse keeper at Gayhead. And it was a huge honor. And it was a wonderful experience for that family. Many people came to the light and his wife would give tours of the light and they hosted people there. And his granddaughter, Martha Vanderhoop, who we interviewed for the film, she has done a wonderful job of sharing that story, not only with us and with the film, but with places like the National Lighthouse Museum. It just reverberates through the generations that role that he played as the lighthouse keeper. His son, Martha Vanderhoop, who's in the film, her father, Charles Vanderhoop, became a merchant marine captain. Again, from being up in the lens room and polishing the glass and seeing all the ships, he became inspired to become a merchant marine captain and sailed all around the world. And so that's just something, a legacy that's sort of been passed down through the generations.
The Gayhead Light also figured prominently in the burgeoning tourism industry on the vineyard. There was a dock for ships to unload passengers, and the residents would use oxen to ferry people up to the light. What were some of the other ways the Aquinnah Wampanoag catered to tourists?
Well, yes, the lighthouse became a huge draw, especially after they put the Fresnel lens in there. It was actually the lens itself was a huge draw in the region. And then, as you mentioned, they put the dock in and people would come up to the light, and there were people who had guest houses and they served people meals. And I think it was a very, it was helpful to the economy up there to supplement some of the income for the Wampanoag members. And people would make the pots out of the clay cliffs, and they would set them up along where now is sort of the throughway to go up to the top of the cliffs and look out on the overlook. And I think it was a very, and always has been, that the cliffs have always been a very important part of the Aquinnah Wampanoag identity, from a spiritual point of view, from an economic point of view. It's always been sort of the center.
Yeah. And what a view, huh?
Oh.
All right, so Gayhead Light was first illuminated in 1799, and it was only 43 years later in 1844 that the wooden tower was moved back 75 feet from the eroding cliffs. By 1852, it was clear that the light was in danger of being eroded again, and a new tower erected further back. Fast forward to 2010, and lightkeeper Richard Skidmore arrives to the lighthouse property and finds a fence by the cliffs had disappeared. It was clear that once again the lighthouse had to move back from the eroding cliffs. So how did you decide what role coastal erosion and climate change would play in the film?
Well, that's an interesting question, because the cliffs, you know, there's a few different time frames happening, time arcs, I should say, in the story. And one of them is geologic time. So the cliffs eroding is something that has happened for and continues to happen since the glaciers retreated. And you can see when you stand on the beach there in front of the cliffs, the boulders that have left behind as the cliffs have retreated over this very long period of time. And so as far as how that played into the structure of the film, I really felt like this film is about historic preservation and also dramatic it can be to lose things over time. So living in the town of Aquinna myself, you know, I've kept track of the cliff's erosion, and there is a certain sadness to watching it go away. You lose certain colors, but then certain colors get uncovered, and, you know, it's just something that you sort of have to accept because it's happening, and there's
nothing you can do to change it, right?
Yeah. But it's very stark. I mean, you can see that erosion happening every time we have a big storm. Mm-hmm. It kind of accelerates that. And that was some of, you know, when we knew we had to move the lighthouse, we were all very aware that at any moment a huge chunk could fall off the front and then we'd be out of time and wouldn't be able to move it. So that made things a little more dramatic.
Yeah. The film is Keepers of the Light. Its broadcast premiere is tonight at 9 on WGBH Channel 2. We'll have more information about the film and broadcast details at our website, capeandislands.org. Liz Witham, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Coming up after a break, we remember Provincetown fisherman Eddie Ritter.